by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass makes heaven the middle of it. Grass makes heaven the middle. We are grass makes heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to the Secret Truth. This impeachment, you could say inquiry, is really the main news of the week. But there were other things too that were going on, and we're going to pick up a plethora of differing news items. But we're going to start off with Tucker Carlson this last Friday night and his sort of overall view of this impeachment proceedings or inquiry, or however you want to say it. Pelosi finally made an announcement that she's going to pull all six committees together and start an impeachment inquiry. So here we go with Tucker Carlson. I'm going to follow that with Representative Nunes and Maria Bartiromo. So here we go now with Tucker Carlson and what he sees overall about this right now.
Tucker Carlson, tonight, happy Friday. It's been one of those weeks that really nobody could have predicted. On Monday, we checked the records. We opened this show with a segment about climate change hysteria. At the time, it seemed like the most pressing issue in the country, if you can believe it. And then just 24 hours after that, we were assessing the impeachment of the President of the United States. That's the kind of week it's been, and that's where we remain tonight. As of right now, it looks like impeachment is likely to happen. The fascinating thing is that nobody can seem to explain exactly why it's going to happen. Can you explain? Quick, in a paragraph or less, describe the specific crime that Donald Trump has been accused of committing. Stumped? That's okay. Don't feel bad. So is Nancy Pelosi, and she's running the whole thing. The best she could do today was to suggest that Russia somehow has a role in all of this. Watch.
It is wrong for any foreign government to interfere in our elections. And here you have the President of the United States asking for that. And they know how wrong it is. So it's wrong for, as we saw with Russian interference. And by the way, I think Russia has a hand in this, by the way.
Huh. Now, as she would put it, to be clear, Nancy Pelosi can point to no evidence that, quote, Russia has a hand in this. She's just saying that, just throwing it out there. Just as she's simply saying that Donald Trump cut a secret deal with the president of Ukraine. She can't cite a single fact to show that's true. She's making it up. But nobody in Washington cares. Facts are not the point of this exercise. Power is the point of this exercise. Seizing it, wielding it. Well, it turns out that when power is your only aim, you will say anything, including, maybe especially, things that are the precise 180-degree opposite of what is actually true. Case in point, the latest claim they're making. It definitely fits in that category. They're telling you that the push for impeachment has nothing to do with politics. Nothing at all. Political considerations couldn't be more irrelevant here. Watch them lie.
Politics be damned. It's time to do what is right. And in this moment, we must continue these impeachment proceedings.
This is not a political statement. It's a harsh reality, which is why the Speaker has acted.
And I don't think the action of an inquiry is a political move. It's not about politics. It's not about partisanship. It's about patriotism. It's about protecting.
Yeah, it's about patriotism, kids. Aunt Nancy swears it is. If you love this country, you will shut up and obey her. Ugh. So what's the point of even repeating a talking point that stupid? Is there a single person in this country who really thinks it's about patriotism? In fact, is there anyone who thinks it's about protecting the country? How many more self-righteous lectures are we going to need to hear about national security delivered by the very people who gave us open borders and an endless string of pointless wars? In fact, if there's one thing that group doesn't care about at all, emphatically doesn't care about, it's the security of our nation. National security. There's no moral component to any of this. They saw an opening to grab power, and they're taking it. The question, the interesting question is, why now? Why impeach now? There's a presidential election a year from now. The president actually is beatable, theoretically anyway. Look at the numbers. You could beat him. You could try anyway. Elizabeth Warren's not a weak candidate. So why not try? Why not just let democracy do its thing as it has every 4 years for 240 years? Because, and this is the deepest truth, they can't. They can't win that way. The Democratic Party has become too radical to win a conventional election. And if you're wondering if that's true, ask yourself this. When was the last time a Democratic candidate seemed to care about improving your life? By the way, improving your life is the most basic of all political promises. Vote for me and I will make your life a little better. When was the last time someone on the left said that to you? Unless you're a convicted felon or an illegal alien, you probably can't remember the last time. In just the last 3 years, the Democratic Party's agenda has become openly hostile to middle America. Hostile, by the way, including to many of its own voters. They're not even pretending anymore. If they get power, they're taking away your rights, starting with the most basic right of all, your right to defend yourself and your family.
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period.
Do you believe in the mandatory buyback of, quote unquote, assault weapons?
I do believe that we need to do buybacks, and I'll tell you why. They are weapons of war with no place on the streets of a civil society.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the assault on our core and most basic institutions continues apace, ever more aggressive with every passing week. Law enforcement itself, they're now telling us, has no moral standing to enforce the law.
I have challenged our police department to recognize all of the ways in which the uniform has been burdened by racism.
Training for police officers on implicit racial bias and procedural justice, because to deny it exists is to deny folks liberty and in many cases life.
How can we continue to lose the lives of unarmed black men in the United States of America at the hands of white police officers? That is not justice.
If you are young and black, you're treated differently because of the color of your skin. I don't believe that it's just a case of a few bad apples. I believe that the system is broken.
You know, it's just crazy talk. I mean, none of it's accompanied by numbers because they can't prove it because it's not true. And outside of faculty lounges, everybody in America recognizes that. And it's not just their position on law enforcement. It's all of their new positions. Free health care for illegal aliens. Reparations for slavery. Forcing everybody in the country to pretend that there are somehow more than two genders. That's the new Democratic agenda, and it's so bonkers that there's no precedent for it. If Barack Obama came back to run on his 2008 platform, the one that made him president, Antifa would show up outside his house to protest. So the bottom line is you can't win an election with this stuff. Normal people don't support these ideas. This is an agenda fit not for an election, but for a revolution. That means that ordinary democracy must be suspended. That's why the left wants votes for violent felons and children and illegal aliens. It's why they want the Electoral College to be dismantled and discarded. And ultimately, it's the reason behind this fake Ukraine crisis. If the vote next year is simply about Trump's priorities versus those of the new Democratic Party, it's not close. They'll lose. People don't support these ideas. They may not like Trump. A lot of people don't like Trump. They think he's weird or off-putting and brags about himself or whatever. But if the election is about what you're going to do when you're elected, if it's about ideas, if it's about a platform, an agenda, The Democratic Party will lose. They can't win because people don't support this crap, period. So what do? They have to delegitimize Trump completely. They have to cancel the 2016 election and prevent a fair race from being run in 2020. So in a way, actually, Democrats aren't wrong. They're telling you that democracy is in the balance. They're right. It is. But the president isn't the one trying to get rid of democracy. They are. A new report, meanwhile, indicates that Ukraine couldn't have had a quid pro quo with Trump because they didn't even know that military aid was being delayed. Chief Breaking News correspondent Trace Gallagher has more on this developing story. Hey, Trace.
Hi, Tucker. The whistleblower's account and Democratic lawmakers both argue that during his call with Ukrainian President Zelensky, President Trump laid out a quid pro quo, you know, this for that, meaning the president was dangling $391 million in foreign aid to Ukraine in exchange for an investigation into Joe and Hunter Biden. Democrats also argue that even if the president didn't explicitly make the demand, the innuendo was certainly there. That's where the so-called mob boss secret code comes in. But if a quid pro quo is in place, it stands to reason that both parties would know about it. Except the New York Times is now reporting that a Ukrainian official says Kiev was not made aware that the U.S. had suspended security funds until a month after the Trump-Zelensky phone call. Even the whistleblower acknowledges not knowing, quote, how or when they learned of it, they being the Zelensky administration. Separately, the whistleblower complaint says that U.S. diplomat Kurt Volker, who, by the way, resigned today, was upset about Rudy Giuliani's role in pushing Kiev to open an investigation into the Bidens, and that Volker sought to, quote, contain the damage from Giuliani's outreach to Ukraine. But Fox News now has text messages between Volker and Giuliani from July 19th showing that Volker actually encouraged Rudy Giuliani to reach out to Ukraine and even connected Giuliani to a source very close to President Zelensky.
Next, we've got Rudy Giuliani interviewed by Sean Hannity this last Friday night about his part in trying to secure information from the Ukraine on the wrongdoing of the Bidens. So here we go with that right now.
And breaking today, and what is just the latest example of the left's real psychotic? I mean, this is now a derangement, anti-Trump rage. The New Yorker now features this cover. It shows the president and Rudy Giuliani murdering Uncle Sam. I don't know if the mayor has seen it yet. Former New York City mayor, attorney for the president, Rudy Giuliani. Look, I watched you all the years you were mayor. I know you can take a punch. It's not the first time they've taken a shot at you. I want to get your take. I want to go into the issue of how you got involved, and I want to go to that Biden tape. Because Biden, sure, remember what Nancy Pelosi said? Oh, Trump's guilty of a shakedown using taxpayer dollars. He said that on Liberal Joe. Okay, the only one that's involved in a shakedown using taxpayer dollars, well, that would be Joe Biden.
Sure. This phony charge began with, ironically, right, with their claiming that the president threatened Zelensky with a cutoff of military aid of $400 million if he didn't investigate Biden. That's not true. The president didn't do that. It's clear. The military aid was even on the table then. But that's exactly what Biden did. So if you're going to impeach the president on some crazy trumped up, excuse the expression, charge, then doesn't Biden have to be investigated? And why is it so hard to get Biden investigated?
Well, let's talk about that. When are we going to do that, Mr. Mayor?
I don't know. It's the scandal. The people that are choking America are the corrupt press and the corrupt Democrats that have been covering up this pay for play scheme now for 2 or 3 years. It's not just one situation. It's two situations. Millions in Ukraine, billions in China. John Kerry's son was involved in the one in China. Not just one cabinet member.
So is Whitey Bulger's nephew.
Well, isn't that extraordinary? The money from China goes to Whitey Bulger's nephew, the son of the vice president of the United States, stepson of the vice president of the United States, and the son of the president, and they're coming after me for revealing it. I should be a whistleblower. I brought out what the Washington press, the corrupt Washington press, has been covering up for 2 or 3 years. And to this moment, they believe it's more important to try to figure out did I conduct the investigation correctly? As opposed to, is what I found not only true, but rocks the foundations of our government when you have this kind of pay-for-play at the highest levels? Remember, this is precisely what Hillary Clinton did with the Clinton Foundation. So there is a very good question. What did Obama know, and when did he know it? In December of 2015, the New York Times excoriated Biden for this conflict of interest, having his son, who had just been tossed out of the military for drug problems, put on the board of the most corrupt company in Ukraine while he was giving out billions in the Ukraine.
Mr. Mayor, you once worked in the prestigious Southern District of New York. A lot of great lawyers have come out of there, including yourself, Andy McCarthy, people on the other side of the aisle even. Here's my question.
Yeah.
Looking at Biden, looking at his son, looking what he's admitting to on tape, the case of China, he didn't have any background experience in private equity that I could find or anybody that I know. It's 14 days after he went to China with his dad on Air Force Two, and it's $1.5 billion. We have about 35 seconds.
Oh, the Bank of China was his partner, by the way, and Whitey Bulger's nephew. So that money, that $1.5 billion, was clearly to buy Joe Biden.
Do you see laws broken?
To buy the office of the vice presidency. There can't be any other explanation for it. Meanwhile, Joe was caving into China on negotiations about Sakhalin Islands, about tariffs. There were reports in the New York Times about how soft Biden was on China. And now we say, hey, maybe the $1.5 billion made him a little soft. This is horrible. And it's horrible that I have to go through this to get the press and even the FBI, who was turning down these allegations. That's why the Ukrainians came to me. They said there's something wrong with
and the
your
State
FBI.
Department. Last thing, fact. State Department asked you to look into this. True or false?
I got all the memos, all the texts. They asked me to do it. I reported back to them. And they thanked me for the good work that I did.
Good for you. All right, Mr. Mayor, it's important work. No, it's important. That's an important fact.
Important fact. Investigate Biden and then investigate me. Okay?
Okay. I'll stay on Biden. We'll let the mob go after you like they always do. It's happened your whole career.
One important aspect of this is why have not the Bidens been investigated? Now, I believe John Solomon, he went through and he had to sue last summer. John Solomon's been working on this for a number of years. And last summer, he had to sue the State Department to get additional documents from the State Department about the Bidens' contracts, and especially the son. He had to get information from the State Department, but he had to sue them to get that information out. So it's getting very involved now where you have to sue your own government to get documents that should be forthrightly given to you at any time upon request, a reasonable time to provide those to you. But this is getting very dicey. Coming up next, we've got Maria Bartiromo talking to Republican Representative Nunes, and they really get into the ins and outs of some of this impeachment, and this is getting to be really something similar to the hoax, the Russian hoax. But here we go now with that.
Our top story this hour is the whistleblower hearing. Acting Director Joseph McGuire testified yesterday. Some tense moments as the acting director of the intelligence. Joseph McGuire showed some support for the whistleblower, but cautioned Democrats over the impeachment inquiry. Ranking member of the Intel Committee, Devin Nunes, grilled him over who is the source of the White House leaks. Watch this.
I want to make it clear that I have upheld my responsibility to follow the law every step of the way in the matter that is before us today. I want to also state my support for the whistleblower and rights and the laws.
How would it run in all the mainstream media outlets? How did they get, even though they got a lot of it wrong, but they had the basics of it, that it involved the President of the United States talking to a foreign leader. So did anybody, you or anybody in your office, leak this to the Washington Post or NBC News?
Ranking member, I lead the intelligence community. We know how to keep a secret. As far as how that got into the press, I really do not know, sir.
I just want to make sure because are we just going to foreign leaders? We might just have either the President of the United States not talk to foreign leaders, or publish all the transcripts, because that's what's happening here.
Ranking Member,
and somebody's leaking this, and it's likely coming from the agencies that you oversee.
Joining me right now is the man himself, California Congressman, Ranking Member of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes. Congressman, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thanks very much for joining us.
With you. Absolutely. Thank
so
you.
So I think you made your point there. This was leaked from inside the government.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time, so it's important for everyone to know that there was a conversation with the Mexican president, a conversation with the Australian prime minister, and now you have another leak from inside. This is an inside job of someone who appears to be in the vicinity. It's second and third hand. I think everyone has to remember that, of contents of a phone call that the president of the United States is having with a foreign leader. Remember, all of those conversations are classified, all of them. So how is it that this classified information, somebody who has a clearance, thinks it's okay to go around and talk about that?
Yeah.
And so this thing, this really smells, and there's going to have to be a lot that we're going to have to get to the bottom of.
Well, I mean, is there going to be an investigation of how this did get into the press and the leaking?
Well, likely not, unless the FBI is going to do it. And I think that's a fair question, because, you know, we were told that the, you know, I've asked the DNI if he did it. I asked that yesterday. Did you do it? Did your people do it? No. I asked the ICIG if they did it. They said no. So the only person left is the complainant themselves, so the supposed whistleblower. So if the whistleblowers has to be him or his people that gave it to the Washington Post. And look, what this looks like, there's a lot of people who knew about this previously. This is information warfare. I'm going to copy something that Matt Gaetz says. I know he's been on your show before.
Yes.
And he's super funny, much funnier than I am. But he said that he didn't like the first episode of the Russia hoax, and he sure doesn't like the Ukrainian redux.
Okay.
So, and I think that's what this is about. This is no different than the Russia hoax. It's the same people, same reporters. And now you're going to have some type of investigation done here in the House of Representatives. I don't know what the Senate is going to do. We had a trial yesterday, public trial for a whistleblower. I've never heard of such a thing, you know, as it relates to classified information. In the Senate, they did it behind closed doors, which is the way it's supposed to be done.
Who is the whistleblower?
Well, I mean, we don't know. We haven't been told yet. So we don't know officially. I don't know that we will be told until the whistleblower supposedly wants to come and testify.
But there's some speculation that he works in the CIA, right?
Well, look, once again, where does that break? Mainstream media breaks that.
Right.
We don't talk to the mainstream media, right? I don't do interviews with them. I don't talk to them on background. I give them no information. And I'm quite sure that most of the Republicans, at least that would have knowledge from my committee, do not talk to them either.
Yeah.
Where are they getting this from? They're not getting it from the IC Inspector General. They're not getting it from the Director of National Intelligence.
Right.
They're getting it from someone within that community, so that surrounding the whistleblower who clearly is part of this information operation.
Right. You know, I wonder if part of this is the idea that we all know that the IG is going to be coming out with his FISA abuse report. The Inspector General at the FBI is going to come out with the FISA abuse report soon. And this is another way to say, sort of, look over here, nothing to see over there, because we know where the real wrongdoing was in terms of the 2016 election. But let's talk about wrongdoing here. Did the president do something wrong?
No. What happened? Look, I wouldn't go around, do it the way, I wouldn't say things the way that the president says things sometimes. But, you know, he's a New York business guy. You know them well. They talk differently than the rest of us in the United States. And so he's probably treating it as a business decision. Now, look, what does that mean? Number one, he doesn't like the fact that other countries aren't paying their fair share. He doesn't like the United States fronting money to these countries. That's
right.
Number one. Number two, people have to understand that the origins of the Russia investigation begin in Ukraine. Okay, now, this is only slightly in the weeds, but I think most of your viewers know Fusion GPS, the firm that was paid by the Democrats to dig up dirt on the Trump campaign. Most of their dirt, original dirt, if you go back to the so-called Steele dossiers, comes from Ukraine.
I see.
So the president was under, you know, under this investigation and this cloud for, you know, since late 2015, early 2016.
Yep.
Finally gets cleared by Mueller. Why would he not? I mean, I know that if I was the president and I want to, and I'm talking to the Ukrainian president, I want to say, hey, what's going on over there? Why did all your people give all this dirt to these bad guys on me?
Right.
I'd like to know what you know.
Yeah.
So I think he has every right to ask the president of Ukraine what was going on over there.
So once again,
and by the way, Maria, yeah. Don't forget.
Yeah.
That was about the 2016 election.
I was just going to say.
I thought we all wanted to know about the 2016 election.
I was just
going to
say, once again, the origins of the Russia probe, the origins as to why the FBI decided that Donald Trump had anything to do with Russia meddling in the election, comes into focus on this as well. So this has been needling the president now for the 2.5 years that the country was in hysterics over collusion, and he's asking the president of Ukraine what the heck is going on over there, because it's still bothering him that he had 3 years of having to be on defense because they put him in the Russia meddling story.
Yeah, and don't forget, this is if you look at the Russia hoax, you know, 1.0.
Yeah.
This is the sequel. Same players, same people. Intelligence agencies leaking to press, same reporters, same politicians here in Washington that are, you know, oh my God, this is crazy. And look, they want to use this for impeachment. Russia hoax is dead. They've basically, this is metamorphed into something they can use and say, oh, see, now we're going to use Ukraine.
Well, what was Adam Schiff saying yesterday? I mean, Adam Schiff, the chairman of your committee now,
yeah,
came up with his own version of events. And his own, you know, download of what the president said to the Ukraine president. Let's listen to that. I got to get your reaction. Here it is.
Okay. All right.
This is the essence of what the president communicates. We've been very good to your country. Very good. No other country has done as much as we have. But you know what? I don't see much reciprocity here. I hear what you want. I have a favor I want from you, though. And I'm going to say this only 7 times, so you better listen good. I want you to make up dirt on my political opponent, understand lots of it, on this and on that.
So was that all made up?
I don't know. When I was sitting there, I don't know, I couldn't see the screen, but my colleagues and I kept listening to that, and that went on and on. You only played a short part of that. That went on for about a minute and a half.
But it's not what was in the transcript, though, is what I'm saying.
It's not real. It's fabricated. It's fabricated. So it's not real. It's not what was said. And then later, I'm sitting there looking at my colleagues. We're going, wait, what's going on? And then later, after we called him on it and said, that's not what was in the phone call, that is not what was in the transcript, he comes back later and says, oh, it was a parody. Well, only in the Democrats' fantasy lands is that parody. This is a serious issue. They want to impeach the president of the United States. They're accusing him of crimes. And then you fabricate nonsense. Okay, that's what they did yesterday. That was all nonsense, what you just played.
Yeah.
None of that happened. And then you come back and say, once you get busted on it, you say, oh, it's just parody. Oh, let's laugh about it.
No, unbelievable.
Nobody's laughing. This is not funny.
This is causing
major problems in this country.
I want to get back to the wrongdoing and where there was wrongdoing. Did Joe Biden do anything wrong?
Well, that needs to be investigated. So, you know, it's not just President Trump that's been trying to get information from Ukraine. We have too. We have long wanted to know who were Fusion GPS's sources. Okay, so we've been trying to track that information down. There's been some reporters who have been out there trying to get this information for the last year or so. And that's John Solomon, who's been on your show.
Yes.
Before. He's done a great job of looking into Ukraine.
Yes, he has.
This ought to tell some people a lot, okay? When he's breaking this news, you've got the Republicans looking to try to find this information as what are the origins of the Russia probe. You've got some reporters, a few, not very many, you and a few others covering this. Now all of a sudden, this gets concocted about Ukraine. Nobody wanted to know about Ukraine before. Remember, Ukraine were the good guys,
yeah.
Russia was the bad guys. Now you've got that. Now if you believe they're only in their fantasy land, could they turn around and say, oh, well, now Trump actually favors the Ukrainians, not Putin.
Unbelievable.
They, the mainstream media didn't want to know anything about Ukraine. Now they want to know everything about Ukraine. So look, this is a joke, but it's a serious one. It's a serious joke.
Is this going to affect the president? Is the president going to be forced from office, in your view? And what do you think viewers and voters are going to take away from this whole thing? Because, you know, you just connected the dots for me, and it was really important that all of the beginning, the origins of the Russia probe started in Ukraine. That is such a big, important point, and I'm glad you made it. Is the president in any jeopardy?
No, because look, the reason he was in jeopardy last time is because they ran an information warfare campaign. You had dirty cops at the FBI, right, who actually had an FBI investigation going into the President of the United States based on information the Democrats gave them. This time, at least, we've got adults over at the DOJ and FBI, so there's not an investigation going on, okay? So you've got the Congress, the Democrats in Congress, yeah, who are using this to feed their never-ending impeachment appetite. Remember, right, they went out and poisoned the American people. They've got their base poisoned on this.
That's right.
So much so that they have to keep pouring jet fuel on their base to keep money coming in.
Unbelievable.
And so, I mean, that's what's really going on here.
And
Marianne,
real quick before you go, when is the IG FISA abuse report coming out? Are we ever going to actually focus on the real wrongdoing?
Yeah, well, look, the IG report is finished. It's going through a declassification process now.
All right.
Remember when the Mueller report came out? It took roughly, about a month or so.
Yeah.
So my guess is it's going to take somewhere around a month.
Okay.
But the difference, remember the Mueller report was also fantasy. That was just garbage, right? Well, we poked holes on that. What the IG is doing is been done with professionals. It's not been politicized, so it might take even longer to actually go through and unredact and make it available for the American people.
Well, I think part of this whole charade is they looked at the stage of the Democratic hopefuls and said, you know what? Trump is going to win again. We got to impeach him now, whatever it takes.
Actually, they've said that.
Some of
the members of Congress have said that.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Congressman, it's good to see you this morning. Thanks very much.
All right.
Devin Nunes joining us there in Washington.
Next coming up is Andy McCarthy has written a book called Ball Collusion. And about a year ago, about 10 months ago, he spoke to the David Horowitz Center for Democracy, I believe it's called. And I'm going to play a little bit of that speech to you. And he sort of sets out some of the problems that Hillary had on this server. But he sets it out in very, very cogent, very clear, with great clarity about really what was going on then. So here we go with Andy McCarthy, very honorable person. Here we go with Andy.
Well, thank you all. Thank you very much. Let's see. Oh, no. This is why Joe DiGenova, Victoria Tunsing, and Christian Adams should be Attorney General. I don't need that. And I started jotting down some notes of Pat Cadell's induction of Milo in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I guess that's not necessary either. It's a great privilege to be here and to see so many old friends. And I'd love to be able to begin with something uplifting, but I feel like instead what I need to begin with is a confession. I have to confess that we are in a situation, and really the one who's in the vortex of it is President Trump, but it is a situation that I not only thought we would never be in, but probably about 20 years ago, I guaranteed that we'd never be in it. It's long ago and far away now, but how many people here remember the wall? Remember around the 9/11 commission? A few people do. It goes to show how much we date ourselves, because that, actually years ago at this very retreat, that was actually a pretty big topic, because at the time what we were, the roiling controversy we were talking about was surveillance. In that regard, I guess some things never change. But in the post-9/11 era, we we're trying to analyze what it is that allowed an attack of that magnitude to happen. And a lot of us who were on the front lines of it and who were in the government at the time, in the Justice Department, as I was for 20 years, could not get away from the fact that what had caused the inability of the government to understand the threat that we were facing was a bunch of self-imposed regulations that the Justice Department had put in around the mid-1990s. It was actually after I prosecuted the blind sheikh after the first World Trade Center attack in 1993. And after that, they began to be afraid in the Clinton Justice Department of a hypothetical problem. They worried that the government would take its counterintelligence powers and use them pretextually in order to conduct a criminal investigation when there was no evidence of a crime, when there was no rational basis to believe that a crime had occurred. And a lot of us took great umbrage at that. And I was one of them. I was one of the people there saying that would never happen. And the reason I was so, so confident that it would never happen was very simple. The adults in the Justice Department and the FBI, that is the high-ranking officials whose job it was to manage, to supervise, to impose order on the investigations that are done throughout the country, would never allow it to happen. If there were some rogue agent who tried to carry that out, who tried to use national security powers as a pretext to conduct a criminal investigation, there would be somebody in the upper ranks of the FBI and somebody even higher in the upper ranks of the Justice Department to tell them no. One thing I didn't think about, and that is, what happens when the adults decide to take over the investigation themselves? Who is it that can tell them no? And I think what we're finding out is that the answer is no one. And the story of what has happened in this country in connection with the 2016 elections, a continuum that goes from Hillary Clinton email investigation all the way through what we're dealing with today, the Mueller investigation, which is not only going on, but we hear may even have new indictments to file this week. That is a story of what happens when the FBI and the Justice Department, for our own good, of course, decide that they know better than we do who should be running the country. And they decide that their take on that is so important that they need to do what they never otherwise do, which is take over investigations at the headquarters level. You know, one of the things that has almost never been talked about since we've been dealing with this controversy going back to the beginning of 2016 is how this happened, why this happened. It's natural that you don't really have a chance to look back and say why when you're still in the middle of it. But I have a suggestion for why it happened. The FBI and the Justice Department like to have investigations run at the field level. What that means is there's 94 districts in the United States. Every state has at least one district. A number of the bigger states have multiple districts. But there's about 94 federal districts throughout the country. And the way that we work in the Justice Department and the FBI is we like to have investigations run and investigated in the place where the crime occurs. Now, one of the reasons for that is not only common sense, it's constitutional. You're entitled to have a trial, if you're accused of a crime, in the place where it's alleged that you committed the crime. That's where the jury's drawn from. That's basic. Plus, it's common sense that you would want the investigators who were there on the scene to conduct the investigation. But there's another important reason why the Justice Department and the FBI run things that way, and it's almost never discussed. And that is, the FBI, the Justice Department, the federal government want to, or at least they used to want to, Have investigations run outside the political pressure of Washington? Because they want to make sure that investigations are decided by the evidence and the law, not the political insanity that goes on inside the Beltway. And in this investigation, for whatever reason, and this goes back to Hillary Clinton's email investigation, which was a criminal investigation, and the investigation that's known as Trump Russia, which is pretextually a counterintelligence investigation, but is actually a fishing expedition in search of a crime carried out under the umbrella of counterintelligence. But in both of those ends of the investigation, they ran it out of Washington. They ran it at the headquarters level. When case decisions had to be made, when investigative steps had to be decided on, they weren't decided on as they are in a normal case. Like when I was a federal prosecutor and I was running a case, I would meet with my case agents who were from the field office, and we would decide on an investigative strategy. And I would run that up my chain of command, and he would or she would run it up their chain of command at the FBI. That's how things are supposed to work. In this case, there was no chain of command, there was just command, because the investigation was run from the top. Now, why did the investigation turn out the way that it did? Hillary Clinton was looking at a mountain of evidence. And it wasn't just about classified information. One of the great head fakes of all time is the idea that the Hillary Clinton case hinged, fell, or rose on this idea of whether she was grossly negligent in handling classified information. It was actually very clever of them to discuss this in terms of, did they change the memo? Did they change it from grossly negligent to extremely careless? Because it focused us in on this issue of how she handled the classified information. If that case walked into a normal prosecutor's office, it would have been handled as a straight-up intent case. This wasn't a gross negligence case. This was a case of somebody who set up illegally and against regulation, the regulations, by the way, that she herself had to enforce as the head of the State Department, a system where she systematically conducted all of the business of the Secretary of State under circumstances where she knew that 80% of her job involved classified information, and that it was inevitable, if you set up a system like that, that classified information was going to be retained on it and transmitted over it. In a normal case, you would have indicted that case as an intentional violation of the Espionage Act, and you would have told the jury at the end, even if you don't believe she knew exactly what she was doing, you can still convict her if you find she was grossly negligent. But gross negligence in a case like that, in a normal case for a normal defendant, it's an add-on. It's an even-if count. And yet the way the media talked about this case, you would have thought that was the whole ballgame. And as a result, we were so captivated by that question that we not only missed that this was a fairly straightforward, straight intent case, we missed everything else that she was involved in connection with violations of the federal penal code. What happened to the 30,000 emails? I'm not asking that like President Trump asks it. I'm asking in the way that a prosecutor asked about it. It's a felony to destroy one government file. We're talking about over 30,000. Over 30,000. And the server was wiped clean after they got a preservation letter from the House of Representatives and after they got a subpoena from the special committee that was investigating Benghazi, which, if it had been committed, I guess, after 2016, would have been called obstruction of justice. Unfortunately, before November 2016, I guess it's just Hillary being Hillary. This was not just a classified information case. This was a multiple felony straight up case that they made go away. And you can talk all you want. I put my cards on the table on this. Jim Comey and I started out in the U.S. Attorney's Office together. I know him for 30 years. I've always liked him. I always got along with him. And I intensely disagree with the decision-making he made here. But I'm about to say something that is quasi in his defense. So if you don't want to hear it, go like this. You can blame the FBI all you want. But they were just the front man here. President Obama, in April of 2016, on national television, on Fox News, in an interview with Chris Wallace, stated outright that he did not want Hillary Clinton to be charged. He stated outright that he didn't think she had done anything wrong. And his theory for why she didn't do anything wrong was that she didn't intend to harm national security. Now, the fact is, that was a classic Obama straw man. The statute under which she was being investigated does not require proof that somebody had an intent to harm national security. That's a different crime. We have a crime for that. That's not the one she was being investigated under. What President Obama was effectively telling you was that if you get somebody who robs a bank at high noon, you don't prosecute them for the bank robbery because they didn't commit a murder during it. That's about the logic that we're dealing with here. But harm to the United States was not an element of the offense. It was not part of what she was being investigated for. Nobody thought she did this to harm the United States. She did it to hide the degree to which the State Department in her tenure was put in the service of the Clinton Foundation. That's the reason that she needed to do this.
Here's a very interesting, some quotations and some pronouncements by Geraldo Rivera on Fox and Friends just recently in the last few days. And this is very interesting, the way he describes what's going on in Congress and about this impeachment and so forth. Here we go right now.
All right. Did it all go to weapons, or did some go south?
Well, the breakdown is beyond, no one has faults. The breakdown is exactly what the Senate okayed. And it does have lethal weapons in there, something Barack Obama was unwilling to do. Right. So that's why a Ukrainian leader says, I appreciate everything you guys have done for us over the last 2.5 years. And the question is, which you come to, on July 19th, the aid was held up. Why? Why did the vice president, who was supposed to go to the inauguration and represent the administration, why did he not go? Why did Secretary Perry go instead? What happened when Murphy and Johnson went over to talk to the Ukrainian leader? And when Rob Portman came out in August and said, I talked to the president about it, it had nothing to do with any type of conversation on Joe Biden. The conversation was about corruption. And then when Rob Portman says, we just need to get him that money, a week later, they got the money. So that's what the president is going for him.
But it gets back to my main question, the $69 question. Where did the money go? Was the money used to buy weapons, or was the money used to line the pockets of the corrupt people that the president is complaining about?
You would have to have proof of quid pro quo. And no matter if he gave him the money a month later after that conversation or 2 months later, if we don't have proof that the president was holding back because he wasn't getting information about Joe Biden's son, then
that's
he's not
the
guilty.
That is what a reasonable person would assess the situation. I see it differently. After listening to the Democrats, they believe that they have it now. That everything else, Russia collusion, Stormy Daniels, taxes, making money on hotels and all that, they're going to put everything away and they're going to laser focus on this. This is going to be what the impeachment is all about. Maybe one or two little other things fall in. So it's going to be the President of the United States in a conversation that was intercepted by a rotten snitch. I'd love to whap him, but that's another story. Imagine this poor president, his whole tenure in office has been marked by snitches and rats and backstabbers.
Yep.
It's amazing how he functions at all. But he'll have to defend that statement, and it'll be the essence of impeachment, and I think they'll even lose some Democrats on the way to indicting him.
All right, Geraldo, thank you very much for
your
point of view. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
going to end up this way. Pause you go, Wall Street Journal. And we're talking about Iran. And if we really tighten down the screws on Iran, we could break their economy and create chaos over there. But this will end our program for this first hour. Thank you for being with us this evening. Here we go with Pause You Go.
The Iranians, that they will be increasingly isolated if they continue their malign activities.
So this basically takes off the table any of the ideas of providing tax credits that the French president had had for Iran to help them get over sanctions. But what needs to happen now from the Europeans if we really want to continue to pressure Iran? What should they do next?
Well, I actually think, Paul, they're going to continue to try to convince President Trump to offer sanctions relief in some form.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think the French are not going to give up on this. They've floated this idea of a $15 billion credit facility that the Iranians can draw down on, which needs U.S. permission in order to operate. I think they'll continue to try to push this idea to give the Iranians sanctions relief to come back to the table. But I think what the Europeans really need to do is send a stark warning to the Iranians that if they continue escalating on the nuclear side, the Europeans are going to walk away from the nuclear deal. And if they continue striking at global energy resources and infrastructure, the Europeans are going to snap back their own sanctions.
Is the president likely to take that invitation from the French even after the strike on the oil facilities? I mean, the president was looking to really talk to Hassan Rouhani, the president of Iran, at this UN meeting, but it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. It's a good thing it didn't happen. And I certainly don't think that the president is going to allow himself to be blackmailed by the regime in Iran and offer them billions of dollars for merely the opportunity to come back to the table. So I hope the president sticks to his guns and makes it very clear that unless Iran comes back to the table to negotiate a comprehensive agreement based on the president's terms, then the maximum pressure campaign is going to intensify.
I was at a media breakfast this week with Rouhani, with several members of the press, and he was asked about negotiations with Trump. And he said, we will not negotiate as long until, unless, the sanctions are lifted. Of course, if you lift the sanctions, then they have less incentive to cooperate. So do you see any bend in the Iranian position from here?
I see some bend because I think the Iranians recognize that they're facing imminent economic collapse. And
it's that bad. That's a fairly forceful statement. Imminent economic collapse.
Yeah, I think the Iranians are in a situation where they're running out of foreign exchange reserves. They're not going to have the money to pay for imports that they need to run their factories. With factories closing, they're going to have massive unemployment. And so their situation is getting worse every day. And I think the administration, with a few moves, could actually bring about that kind of economic collapse, which will then put the regime in a position where it'll have to choose between negotiations and the survival of its regime.
Now, one of those actions is so-called snapback sanctions, which were part of the original 2015 deal in there. But that involves the United Nations, does it not? Explain how that would work and what it would mean.
So the way it works is under the Obama nuclear deal, the one good thing that the president negotiated at the time, it was the unilateral snapback, the ability of the United States to unilaterally snapback UN sanctions against opposition from Russia, China, or even Europe. So the United States can still move unilaterally to snap back those UN sanctions. And that's important because it would bring back all the Security Council resolutions. It would force the Europeans to have to comply with these UN sanctions and Asian countries. And it would isolate Iran politically, but also would do something, Paul, very important. There's still about $5 billion worth of Iranian-European trade this year. If you could shut down $5 billion worth of trade, then you're essentially in the position that I suggested earlier, where they can't buy essential goods from the Germans and the Italians and the Dutch that they need to run their economy, sophisticated machinery that they need for their factories. You get rid of 5 billion euros of trade, and you're putting Iran closer to that position of economic collapse.
Just so I understand, this unilateral decision, if just one country, the United States, could call for the snapback, it couldn't be vetoed by China, couldn't be vetoed by Russia and other Security Council members?
That's correct. It's a unilateral snapback against the opposition of those countries. I think the Obama administration at the time wisely understood they were never going to get Chinese and Russian support, so they negotiated a unilateral snapback. Now, some are saying the United States can't do that alone because the United States has walked away from the JCPOA. That is not the administration's position in terms of the legal interpretation of that snapback.
And I guess the question is, if you're talking about maximum pressure, why hasn't the administration done this so far?
Well, I think the administration is, there's an internal debate about whether this is the time to impose that snapback. Because essentially when you impose that snapback, the Iranians walk away from the nuclear deal, everybody walks away from the nuclear deal, it's dead and it's buried. And then you've got to deal with the fallout from that, and part of the fallout would be continued Iranian nuclear escalation. You've got to be prepared for that.
All right. Thank you, Mark Dubowitz. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
We have to take one more break. When we come back, hits and misses of the week. Time now for hits and misses of the week. Kim, start us off.
So, Paul, this week we saw 16-year-old Swedish environmental activist Greta Thunberg lecture world leaders on climate change at the UN General Assembly, a speech that won her huge praise from some, enormous criticism from others. I'm not going to wade into that debate. Instead, I'm going to give an enormous miss to the UN for even putting her on that stage. Our institutions need to stop turning to teenagers and using them as props in political campaigns. Too much hostility, too much rage directed at them. Keep it with the adults.
Hear, hear. Jason.
Paul, we often complain here in the U.S. about activist judges who want to legislate from the bench, but it's not merely a U.S. problem. The British Supreme Court recently ruled that essentially Britain can't leave the European Union without a trade deal in place. Now, it's been 3 years since Brexit, and the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has said he wants to leave deal or no deal. I think the British Supreme Court should get out of the way.
All right. Dan.
Well, my hit or miss, Paul, kind of depends on how old you are. The folks at Kentucky Fried Chicken have decided to reinvent the venerable Colonel Sanders. The old southern gentleman with the white beard and hair, he has been put out to pasture and retired. He's been replaced by a new, young, sexier cartoon version of Colonel Sanders. It even includes a video game that allows you to kind of try to win his heart. KFC says young people like the new dude. Old people would rather prefer Colonel Sanders, who kind of look like Santa Claus's uncle.
Another reason to go to Chick-fil-A, if you ask me. That's it for this week's show. Thanks to my panel and to all of you for watching. I'm Paul Chagot. Hope to see you right here next week.
Those last comments were on the end of the Paul Chagot, and they're sort of lighthearted, bringing in, you know, Colonel Sanders is a new version, a younger and so forth. But that sort of was the light ending of that particular episode. We've had a lot going on this week in Congress, and boy, we just don't know how this is going to end up. President Trump has a real problem. These people are decidedly serious about knocking him out of this so they don't have to deal with him on the election day a little over a year from now. So this is getting serious, and we've got to start paying attention and coming behind and supporting our president. The second hour tonight, we're going to play President Trump's speech that he gave at the UN. And it's a press conference, about 46 minutes. But anyway, we want to thank everyone for listening out there in our listening audience. And we certainly do welcome and appreciate your support for our program. We never ask for any donations whatsoever, and we're just doing this out of our own pocket. So we're not worried about anyone contributing whatsoever. We're commercial free right now, so we're able to deliver a full 57 minutes and 44 seconds airtime of discussion. And also, what we've been doing lately is playing clips that are maybe 10% under fair use provisions, and then making comments and then trying to explain our own view, mixing it in with that. But anyway, well, thank you very much for listening to us, and good night, and God bless everyone out there. Good night. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.